What's up, everyone? Today on I Heart This, an ode to Homo sapiens, my favorite species ever. I've been thinking about the content in this episode for a couple of years, and since, as you'll see, it had its origins in a high school, it follows closely to the form of a high school debate. Resolved, humans are actually amazing. In the next 35 minutes, I'll outline the reasoning of my opponents, state my own, deliver a scathing rebuttal, and hopefully convince you to look at your own species in whole new ways. So, my fellow sapiens, this is a celebration of you. I'm Ben Lord. You're listening to I Heart This. Let's talk about what we love. Quick warning that there are unbleeped curse words in this episode. It was the end of spring semester 2022, and my sophomore class had circled through all the major topics of high school biology, which meant that it was time for my favorite part of the course, a whirlwind tour of the extravagant diversity of the entire family of living things. We looked at comb jellies and tardigrades and neophytes and slime molds and tunicates. Oh my gosh, there are so many weird things in the world. The day's lesson was just about over, and students were packing up when the kid in the front row by the windows, let's call her Amanda, asked me what my favorite species was. Humans, I said without hesitation. We have got to be the absolute coolest creature that has ever lived. And Amanda raised her eyebrows with a look that said, I must be joking. Humans suck, said Ethan from the back of the room. And now is my turn for a quizzical look. What do you mean humans suck? How could people even think that? But think it they did. In that last 40 seconds of class, it quickly became clear to me that my students had a rather low opinion of human beings. Humans, they said, humans mess up everything they touch. They seem bent on destroying themselves. They're greedy, they're short-sighted. One kid went so far as to say, we're the worst thing that's ever happened to this planet, and a class of nodding faces agreed. And then the bell rang, and they all walked out and wished me a good weekend, leaving me at a loss for what to say. I don't even know if anyone else from that Block 1 biology class even remembers that discussion, but I have thought about it a lot over the past 2 years, about what I might say if I had the time to collect my thoughts. And this episode is a kind of a do-over. It's what I wish I could have said, if I'd had the presence of mind and the time to say it. So, if anyone from Block 1 is out there listening, thanks for everything. This one's for you. You're listening to I Heart This. Apparently, my students are not alone in their stark view of humankind. Hang out in the socials and you're bound to run into something like these Quora thread gems. Human beings are assholes. We're greedy, selfish, judgmental. In fact, I would say in comparison to every living thing on this planet, we are like a plague. We multiply and we kill and we destroy. Or how about this one? People are the reason the world sucks. If left alone, the world is full of beauty, but people have destroyed every semblance of peace in the name of currency, ruined the only chance we ever had at enjoying ourselves, and as such, I pray for the day the human race comes to an abrupt end. Or, even the people I love suck. I suck. Everyone sucks. Complete and utter suckage everywhere you look. Sheesh, man. Against that bleak backdrop, what hope do we have of redemption? No wonder we have so many apocalypse stories. We wish that there was some outside force to cleanse the world, to make it new after we have so mucked it up. In support of this dismal view, people in these discussions say, look around, consider the evidence. Humans treat each other like shit. They steal, rape, cheat, swindle. Look at the Holocaust. Look at slavery. Look at genocide. Not only that, humans shit in their own drinking water and belch fumes into the air. They gobble up resources to make pointless tourist tchotchkes in fast fashion. And they hunt creatures to extinction and turn forests into plains of stumps. They know they're messing with the climate and that the consequences are going to be terrible and somehow are content to pretend that it's not happening. That's whack. There must be something wrong with us. And these sentiments aren't just the uninformed musings of angsty teenagers or poorly spelled diatribes on Reddit. Philosophers have made this case for thousands of years. Confucianists thought that hierarchy and ritual were the only way to cinch down on humanity's inherent selfishness. For St. Augustine, humans were damned by Adam's original sin. Calvinists took masochistic delight in the idea that humans were feeble, despicable worms of the dust. Sorry, worms, those are Jonathan Edwards' words, not mine. I think you're awesome. Hobbes, the philosopher and not the cartoon tiger, argued that only by surrendering freedoms to popes and emperors did we have a chance of climbing out of our primordial savagery when human lives were nasty and brutish and short. William Golding, Mad Max, Machiavelli, Freud, Aristotle, John Adams, Steven Pinker, Richard Dawkins, the list goes on. All of them wrote that humans are basically bad. It's their nature to screw you if they can get away with it. In the past, people called these failings original sin. Today, scholars are more likely to invoke evolution. They'll blame the evil inside us on the principle that survival favors the fittest. Alpha males get the most mates. Selfish people get the most resources. Bleeding hearts will always end up as losers, dying early with fewer mates and fewer children to carry on their altruistic genes. We can't write off these ideas. A lot of smart people are convinced that they are true. I believe with my whole heart that they are wrong. But they deserve to be taken seriously. They deserve an answer. And that answer matters. Our species has problems to solve, and believing that humans are terrible is not conducive to solving them. It leads to despair, and despair does not get medical supplies into Gaza, or restore peace in Haiti, or reduce our dependence on coal and oil. Believing that humans suck is a self-fulfilling prophecy that we can't afford. So today, let's talk about the beauty and goodness of humanity. It's true, we can't ignore our sins, but we can't ignore our virtues either. Humans are miracles. The world, as beautiful as it is, would be so much poorer without us. Take a moment to compare humans with the creatures around you. Pretend that you're not one of us. Pretend that you're an alien. Seeing all of us Earthlings for the first time on a grand tour of Earth's life. Imagine seeing fish and rhinoceros as if you'd never encountered them before. Sequoia trees and roses, mushrooms and condors. And then you come to humans. Even amidst all the wild pageantry of life, there would be no doubt that humans were unique. What would you notice first about us? Would it be our wonderfully dexterous hands? Able to grasp and juggle and carve and write. Maybe it'd be our upright way of walking around on two legs, like stilts, that seems laughable at first until you see us move. Oh man, look at us move! What other creatures can match our versatility? We dance, we stomp, we swing our hips, we snap our fingers, some of us even flip ourselves backwards through the air and land with grace on a narrow beam, or on the blade of a skate, or into a pool of water with hardly a splash. Maybe you'd be floored by our endurance. We may not be fast, but give us enough time and training and we can outrun dogs and antelope and even horses. It's true. I'm not making this up. Personally, I think the first thing to catch my eye would be our beautiful, smooth, sensuous skin. In a world of fur and scales and bark and feathers, there is nothing like it. Coming in so many striking colors, even if we're as dumb as dormice, our bodies alone would surely make us one of the most fascinating creatures to any extraterrestrial visitors. But as it turns out, we're not dumb. Our cousins the apes are pretty darn smart, and dolphins and whales are too, and crows are so clever they can fashion hooks and displace water to get hard-to-reach bits of food, but even they can't begin to compare. Even a human raised by wolves can outthink them all. But humans aren't usually raised by wolves, And that brings me to what would no doubt be the thing most marked by our alien observers. Our most conspicuous superpower is our unique ability to learn from each other. Think about it. No other creature that has ever lived in life's near 4 billion year history can do what we do. We can make culture, a kind of external and evolving intelligence, greater by orders of magnitude than even the most genius individual. No one person could ever be smart enough to invent a computer from scratch. But together, we send probes into space and rewrite our own DNA. These are obvious things. Any stranger would pick these up on a first quick visit. But they are by no means my favorite things about humans. Think of laughter. I mean, there are some other species out there that laugh, but it is nothing like the musical sounds of delight that we make. Think of play. Every other show on Animal Planet has footage of lion cubs like tumbling and wrestling and getting into mischief, but turn your attention away from them for a moment to watch their parents, and I can tell you this, they won't be playing. With a few notable exceptions, any other creature, if they play at all, they play as children and lose that playfulness as they grow up. A decline in playfulness and curiosity is not the result of schooling, as some widely circulated TED Talks would lead you to believe. In mammals, it's just the natural result of growing up. But, humans do play all their lives long. They sing and dance and move cards around on tables and push buttons on their Nintendos and tell jokes for no other reason than joy. Jellyfish do not do this. Deer do not do this. We are the species of play. The evolutionary rationale for play is probably that it gets us exploring and trying things out. So, a natural corollary to our lifelong play is our curiosity, and we burn with it. And we can hardly keep ourselves from pushing buttons just to see what they'll do. Some of us will spend years of our lives and thousands of dollars to find out about the history of art. We travel to the ends of the earth to collect rocks and bugs. Even the most jaded and cynical will stop with intrigue when faced with a mystery. And then we sit back in awe at what we have discovered. We, alone of all species, have science, the organized pursuit of awe and wonder, and we alone ask how trees grow and where mountains come from and why stars burn. But that's not all. Look at our movies, our stories, our songs. Have you seen the 40,000-year-old paintings at Lascaux? Have you seen the vibrant colors of the Sistine Chapel? Have you looked down from the window of an airplane that is flying miles above the ground? Have you watched the controlled explosions of powerful rockets push human beings into space? We are the species that makes things. We are the one that can see a beauty or a utility that doesn't yet exist and make it so. A world without humans would be a world without poetry, without stories, without words. But even without language, humans express their hearts with a precision that no other species can match. We cry, we laugh, we kiss. We make tender and passionate love. In what other species do individuals look into each other's eyes and see that there is another self in there? And here's the real miracle. We look into those eyes at those other selves and we care about them. We wish them well. We want good things for them beyond just the food or warmth or sex or safety they could give us. Some would dither over whether this altruism is real or just some convoluted self-interest in disguise, but I say, who cares? It is the most beautiful thing. in this vast and cold and lifeless universe, and so far as we know, it is ours alone. We have empathy. You see someone else cry and you feel sad. You watch a video of a young woman, deaf all her life, who after an experimental implant hears sound for the first time. And you don't know anything about her, and yet when she holds her hand over her mouth, you weep with joy. You see a picture of a firefighter carrying the tiny body of a toddler from the rubble of the Oklahoma City bombing on a magazine when you are 17 years old, and you feel echoes in your own heart of the crushing grief that her mother must surely know, and you never forget those tiny white socks. What other creature has such capacity to feel the pains and joys that are not our own, to momentarily jump into the heart of some other person? And we love, we love, we love, we love. I will risk being sentimental to say it, but Hugh Grant's voiceover was right. For humans, love actually is everywhere. I have seldom gone a day in my life without seeing people be kind and generous and appreciative of each other. Writing notes to teachers they had years ago to say thank you for touching their lives. Working two thankless full-time jobs so that their kids can go to college. My dad goes twice a week to grow food to feed people who need it that he's never going to meet. And we don't just love. We run back into battle over and over again to pull our wounded friends to safety. We stand down tanks in Tiananmen Square. We walk across that bridge in Selma because we love our children and we want them to be judged by the content of their character. Now think of that, and you tell me, would the world really be better off without us? But maybe my students still aren't convinced. Maybe they wonder whether our best moments are outweighed by our worst. And fair enough. Let's take a closer look. Let's take apart the elements of the humans suck argument one by one. Let's start with our crimes against the life systems of our planet. They are really real. I really do lie awake at night with that sinking feeling in my belly, thinking about what the consequences mean for my kids. But even here, even in the face of civilization unraveling disaster, I have sympathy for the people perpetrating the crime. My students, like lots of people, think humans are destroying the Earth out of greed. Like the Captain Planet cartoons from the 90s, where in every episode, teenagers with magic rings fended off villains who were gleefully polluting the planet. Now, I don't deny that there are unscrupulous people making bank by doing evil things for big oil companies. But that's not what's driving climate change. Climate change is driven by a system where fossil fuels get burned whenever everyday people bring their kids to school, or build a new house, or fly to grandma's for Christmas, or buy burgers for a backyard barbecue. Humans didn't plan to become an ecosystem-altering force. Mostly they planned to stay alive and protect their kids. When something came along that made life a little bit easier or improved their thin margins of survival, they took advantage of it. In my book, that's not a moral shortcoming. And yes, we now know better. And yes, people are eating up what little time we have by stalling or bickering. But in context, our response is not that slow. Think of the 70 years of continuous struggle from Seneca Falls to women's suffrage, or the 90 years that passed between when Thomas Jefferson wrote that all men are created equal to when the United States finally prohibited slavery. The public at large didn't even know that humans could change the climate until about 35 years ago. And by that point, we had spent almost two centuries becoming dependent on fossil fuels for nearly every aspect of our lives. My point here is not that we can relax and give ourselves a pass. My point is that human beings aren't assholes because we haven't figured this out yet. We are not inherently destructive. Most human societies in history actually did live within their carrying capacities. Even modern humans, with our massively complex and powerful economies, still have a decent track record of addressing environmental problems once we realize what the problems are. In the United States, for example, the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act have been resounding successes. We have effective laws for protecting endangered species in wilderness areas, and it only took 2 years from the discovery of the so-called hole in the ozone layer for every nation in the world to ban CFCs. And right now, the ozone layer is on track to return to pre-CFC levels by 2045. Will our efforts to draw down atmospheric CO2 be enough? Will we be able to sustain the good lives that we've built? I don't know. But all species end at some point. Being permanent is not a prerequisite for being awesome. Stegosaurs were awesome. That didn't change just because they died out. When humans go extinct, even if we cause that extinction ourselves, it won't erase the beauty that we made. And maybe we won't. Right now, people from around the world are mobilizing to address this crisis. It is an act of species-wide foresight and empathy unprecedented in the entire history of life on Earth. And if we pull it off, it will be the greatest triumph of spirit in the known universe. It would secure our place as the most remarkable species that has ever lived. Even more remarkable than Stegosaurus. Okay, well then what of all that genocide and slaveholding? You can't say that these things were just unintended consequences. You can't say that they were just mistakes. Humans have done some spectacularly awful shit to each other, not because they were ignorant, but because they were being awful. I'm not saying they haven't. It's not like that's news. But to leap from humans do bad things to humans are bad is specious reasoning. Humans also do lots of good things, which things are because of their nature. To follow the evolutionary thinking I summed up a few minutes ago, humans are supposed to be bad because we evolved that way. And if we do good things, it is only because society holds us in line. Our badness is hidden under a thin veneer of civilization, and without laws and cops and nation-states to stop us, it'd be Mad Max and Lord of the Flies all over the place. But consider for a moment what evidence it would take to support that idea. I can think of four types. First, you might look at so-called uncivilized people, foragers who lived outside the confines of governments and religions and all that stuff. But a century of ethnography reveals egalitarian bands with economies based on sharing. Maybe you'd look at how modern people act during emergencies when society can scarcely enforce its own rules, but there you'd find that over and over again, people in emergencies go to great lengths to help others in need. Third, you could study children, people whose supposed true nature hasn't yet been trained out of them. But there, researchers find the same complicated mix of self-interest and empathy that you find in the rest of us. Well, what about controlled laboratory experiments on human behavior? Surely there, we'd find something definitive. And there is certainly no paucity of psychologists who masterminded all kinds of contrived situations in order to reveal humans' true colors. Many are now famously debunked, like the Stanford Prison or Robber's Cave experiment. Some of these so-called experiments were unscientifically designed, where researchers drew their conclusions first and then set up situations they hoped would prove them later on. These ill-conceived attempts to indict people of man's inhumanity to man are mostly instructive for their spectacular failures. Take the story of the Akali raft, whose passengers were frustratingly harmonious, despite the anthropologist researcher who tried repeatedly to instigate violence and conflict to support his flawed thesis about how human conflict is the result of competition for sex partners. After months at sea, it turned out everyone got along pretty well, except with the asshole who kept trying to provoke them into fights. No matter where you look, the preponderance of evidence shows that humans, in a state of nature, whatever that might be, are actually pretty good at getting along. There is no case to be made that people are just naturally bad. But what if it's not about our true nature? What if humans just suck because we have happened to do more sucky stuff than good stuff? When I started writing this episode, I was reluctant to do that kind of moral accounting. I mean, how could anyone measure our goodness against our badness? But that thinking is inherent in the minds of a lot of people who have concluded that humans suck. They've compared the good and the bad and found the goodness wanting. So, since they insist, let's go there. Perhaps we could look at the norm of human behaviors. I mean, that seems relatively easy. As much as we like to write young adult novels about them, most people do not live in a dystopia. This is not just a glass half full perspective either. We objectively and measurably save more often than we kill and give more often than we steal. Or maybe we should look at the trends over time. On that morning 2 years ago, my students were convinced that humans were making the world worse. But that is not true. Since we've been able to measure such things, war has declined and democracy has spread. By almost every measure of well-being, life is better than it has been in thousands of years. Well into the 19th century, some of the world's wealthiest countries saw between a quarter and a third of all children die before their fifth birthday. Today, even in Ethiopia, one of the poorest countries in the world, less than 7% do. In the year 1800, about 10% of the world could read. Today, in the global north, almost every single person can. And in the global south, more than two-thirds can. And there, most of the people who can't are over 65. In the 1500s, every so-called great power went to war. Every one. Today, there are only two conflicts that involve them. The people of 2024 live with more comfort, more food, more light, more education, more knowledge, and more security than at any other time in recorded history. That is not an accident. It is the result of an entire species working for good. We just can't see it because our brains focus on threats. And the media focus on capturing our brain's attention. No tweet goes viral by pointing out that the world has reduced its nuclear arsenal to a fraction of what it was, and no cable news show will run a headline about all the people who didn't die today of polio. No matter how you look at it, the idea that humans do each other more harm than good just doesn't hold up to scrutiny. Nor is it true that evolution selects for selfish behavior alone. Evolution can and does also select for kindness and cooperation. If you watch out for the people around you, their survival is enhanced by watching out for you. Treating your mate with respect and standing up to bullies makes it more likely that your kids will thrive. Our goodness doesn't exist in spite of evolution. It exists because of it. But in a sense, none of this matters. Because good and bad aren't even objectively real things. We invented them. Cruelty and injustice bother us. We are aware that other people feel pain and joy just like us. We know that the way we treat others matters. And so far as we can tell, we may be the only species that has ever done so. The very fact that we contemplate whether the good we have done outweighs the bad is evidence of just how remarkable we are. Now, I believe that humans are awesome, and I believe in the power of reason to persuade those of us who have given up on humanity, but I also know that reason is not always what's most needed. My students' despair about humanity wasn't a rational case. Looking back, I think my students looked at things like global inequality and climate change, and they were afraid and angry and sad. And they looked at adults like me standing in the front of that room who didn't have the answers to these big problems, and they wondered, if we didn't have answers, then what hope was there? Maybe when they said that humanity was terrible, they were really looking for some hope to believe that it wasn't. What do you do when someone tells you they hate themselves? I really don't know. I actually don't think that I've done a good job responding to things like that. But I don't think you argue your case like a lawyer. That's not what they need. Maybe you just listen. Maybe you acknowledge what they're feeling, and then maybe you just express why you are grateful for them, not as a counter-argument, but as a celebration, to reveal with your own clear seeing what they might be taking for granted. So in that spirit, here's a story. It's a Thursday evening in late May. The sky is blue, the shadows are long, and a light breeze is coming in from the west. And I have just dropped Eva off at the high school chorus room for her call at the spring concert. And since there are still 45 minutes before the show begins, and since it's a beautiful evening, I go for a walk around the school. On the field, the boys are playing lacrosse in a way that reminds me of that Sherman Alexie poem where he says, "Indian boys gallop across the grass against the beginnings of their body. On those Saturday afternoons, unbroken horses gather to watch their sons grow larger in the small parts of the world." In the grandstands, friends and family cheer on their teams. Kids hang on the chain-link fence, some of them with lacrosse sticks of their own, mimicking the moves of the players in the field. A pair of lanky teens wobble around the parking lot on rollerblades. A mother and her daughter walk behind me on the sidewalk, and I try to eavesdrop on their conversation, but I can't make anything out of it because they're laughing so much. A young couple flirts and walks their dogs. Later at the concert, I lock eyes with a cute girl in a sundress. She can't be more than two. Her parents pass her back and forth and whisper in her ear about how to listen quietly to the musicians. And on stage, the high school band produces preposterous amounts of sound from ingeniously crafted convolutions of brass. Some of these songs are centuries old, and just a few notes out of place would be all it would take to collapse into discord, but it never happens. The people in the audience are not on their phones. Even the sundress girl in her tiny shoes is listening with wide eyes. And I try to calculate how many years of teaching and learning, how many years of scales must have been played at how many kitchen tables so that these few minutes could sound so rich and so sweet. And tonight, the young musicians make something beautiful, free to anyone who cares to walk in off the street to listen. Or even if you can't listen, because two ASL interpreters sign both the words and somehow, remarkably and convincingly, even the music. And the music ends, and hearts have been moved. Parents are proud of their children. Strangers are impressed by their skill. And all of us are reminded of music's ability to make us feel something. And all through the auditorium, people rise to their feet and cheer. This whole evening, everywhere I look, people are being beautiful. They learn, they create. They face challenges and master skills. They play, they work, they love. But the real miracle of this evening is how commonplace it is. It could have been any evening, and not just here. Evenings like this happen in small towns all over America and allow for a few changes in dialect and climate and clothes and choice of sport. It could be any of a million towns around the world. People are beautiful everywhere, all the time. They never seem to stop. Human beings are worth saving and cherishing and celebrating, not because we do more good than harm, and who knows if there even is a way to weigh our good against our harm. But harm is built into the universe. That's not humanity's fault. That's the second law of thermodynamics. Life will always be an uphill battle. It will always be easier to destroy than to build. Even if you do nothing, terrible things will happen, but not beauty. You have to work for that. Everything beautiful that humans have done required someone to pour love and care into something, and humans have done the work. We figured out why earthquakes happen and how stars live and die. We went to the moon. We learned to fly. We made movies and wrote novels. Many of us freed ourselves from slavery and poverty and wrested the right to vote from those who didn't want to give it to us. Every day, we make music. We protect national parks. We return our library books. We plant gardens. We stop at stoplights. We kiss. Look at all the love we've made. iHeart This is written, edited, and produced by me, Ben Lord. Our logo was designed by Bryony Morrow Cribbs. Our theme song is used with permission from neosounds.com. New episodes are released around the 14th of every month. You can find our complete archive with transcripts of each show on our website, iHeartThisPodcast.com. If you follow us on Facebook at iHeartThisPodcast, you can get monthly announcements of our episode releases so you don't miss any, and also get occasional musings about things to be grateful for. I'd love to know what your thoughts are about this episode or any other, so send them to me at ben@iHeartThisPodcast.com. The only marketing that happens for iHeartThis is the recommendations that you make on its behalf. So if you enjoyed this episode, please consider telling your friends or leaving a review. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, be kind, be curious, and be thankful.